The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up, Gab Marcotti with us later on to discuss everything Juventus. Will start, though, in the Premier League. Manchester United and Chelsea qualify for the Champions League. United with a 2-0 victory over Leicester. Meanwhile, Chelsea with that win against Wolves sees Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Frank Lampard's side make it into the top four. Leicester City, who let's not forget, were 15 points clear of fifth on New Year's Day, dropped the ball completely in 2020 and have to make do with Europa League football. Donald Richardson then, Stevie Nicol with us. Stevie, United with that win earlier on in the season, you were one of the harshest critics. Ollie, he's proved you wrong, hasn't he?
Oh, it's just me, is it? Listen, you can't say that qualifying for the Champions League is not a success for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because it is. You know, at the end of the day, I think the biggest and the main reason why that happened is because they went out in the transfer market and bought Bruno Fernandes. Without that piece of business, this wouldn't have happened. So, listen, he obviously has to coach the team, and he obviously had a hand in signing Bruno Fernandes. So, yeah, as I said, it's a success. I'm not convinced that he can take them from Champions League qualifiers to actually vying for the title against Liverpool and City. I still think they're way off, and I still think they have to sign more players. But yes, for Ole, getting in the Champions League is a success. But he's had plenty of time.
Your United stat, Don, would you like to drop that now?
Oh, you've gone early there. I mean, they are closer to Bournemouth than they are Liverpool, which is incredible. 32 away from Bournemouth, 33 away from Liverpool. It's not the right time to drop that in, because I think they've done well getting in the Champions League. I think third is an incredible finish. But I agree with Stevie, if Bruno Fernandes doesn't come in, I mean, the only bizarre thing is they were chasing Bruno Fernandes at the start of the season. Why on earth they waited till January to get the signing done, I will never, ever know. But I think Ole deserves a lot of credit. He's let some big-name players go. He's shifted the dynamic inside the dressing room. He's made them younger. He's made them hungrier. They're a better side to watch. There's not too many egos at the football club anymore. And he'll have a job on in the summer trying to convince big players like Paul Pogba to stay on, and then trying to attract maybe three or four players to try and give them some sort of title till next season.
Where do they need to add to the squad, Don?
I would still like to see them with a recognised number nine. I get the argument where people think that Mason Greenwood's going to lead the line, and maybe they could bring in someone like Jadon Sancho to sort of play on the right-hand side, because I'm not convinced in Martial yet again. I think there's such a good player in there, but he's not consistent enough. And watching Harry Maguire today and Victor Lindelof as a pair, I mean, Leicester without James Maddison, without Pereira, without Soyuncu, without some of their very best players. Chilwell was another one that was missing. Vardy and Iheanacho caused the two centre-halves problems time after time after time. And this was an understrength Leicester side. So I would like to see United, if they are going to try and compete again and get closer to City and Liverpool, in my opinion, they need a world-class centre-half.
It's difficult, though, because there's a lot of teams that need world-class centre-halves at the moment, Stevie. Do you agree? Should that be their priority?
Yes, I would think so. You know, I think, listen, Manchester United are as far as the world's concerned, they're one of the big teams. They're one of the teams that most players want to go to. And the fact that they're on the rise, the fact they're now in Champions League, the fact that the whole dynamic, when you say the word Manchester, or the team Manchester United, people think about it in a different way now. You said it about a couple of minutes ago. You know, it's younger, it's more dynamic, the better to watch. This is a mile away from what we were looking at 2 and 3 years ago. So, listen, if there's players available that are good enough and will make United better, then I think United have got a chance. And I do agree, a centre-back, big time, beside Maguire, I think Maguire's a good centre-back in the Premier League. I don't think he's anywhere near Van Dijk, but he certainly made a big impact at United. And I think we should probably just hold off a little because, you know, Greenwood and Martial have had a good spell, but we know Martial's had good spells before, and Greenwood's a young player, so there's still a lot of room for United to build. As Don said, they're 33 points off Liverpool, so clearly they have to get a bigger and better squad, but they're on the right way.
It's a rubbish game today, though, wasn't it, Don? I suppose if you're a United fan, you don't care, but it just felt nervy, there wasn't much quality on show, and in the end, either side could have really won it.
Yeah, well, I thought Leicester in the second half at 0-0 looked like they were going to go and win the game. I thought United, like the West Ham game, I thought they looked tired. I was looking at Nemanja Matic, who was poor today. He looked as though he just wanted the season to end because he never had too much left in his legs. Bruno Fernandes was fading in the game until he scored the penalty. And it was sort of contagious. Everyone just looked jaded. It was like a 100-metre sprinter sort of dipping from the finish line. And yeah, they got the job done, but it was very nervy watching the game because at 0-0, it was completely in the balance.
What's happened to Leicester, Don?
Well, their record's been horrendous. Everyone seems to think that it's just been, you know, since the restart, but they've only took, I think, six wins from a possible 22. So injuries have massively played a part. You know, when you think of Pereira, everyone was talking about him or Trent being the best right-back in the country, the form that he was in at the start of the season. Soyuncu, before he was suspended, was getting linked with the likes of Man City. Kasper Schmeichel at the time wasn't making too many mistakes. He made another costly one today. And then you take out James Maddison at the top end of the pitch and they're always going to be a little bit light. So Brendan Rodgers made a good comment the other day, and whether it was just a Brendan Rodgers statement, I'm not so sure, but he tried to take the pressure off the team today by saying top four was never the aim at the start of the season. It was always the top six. So he tried to sort of relieve a little bit of pressure. So I still think when you look at the bigger context of where Leicester have finished in fifth, I think they've done quite well.
That's rubbish, though, isn't it? If I'm a Leicester fan, I want to be hearing we wanted that top four place. You know,
yeah.
I understand it's a fluid situation. It changes. When you've got a 15-point lead over fifth on New Year's Day and you blow it, Stevie, and you end up finishing fifth, which you would have taken at the start of season, of course you would. No doubt about that. However, things change and surely your targets, your goals have to change with it.
Well, it depends how you want to look at that. If you want me to look at it the way you've just played that out, then it's an absolute disaster being that many points clear and not making it. But if you want to look at it realistically and rationally, Leicester City, if they have the starting 11 on the field, can give anybody a game. But as soon as you start losing players, then you're struggling big time. They have nowhere near. And the reason we didn't think they were top four material is because there's four or five or six other teams with bigger and better squads than them. So, listen, your glass is either half full or half empty. If you're that far clear, you're disappointed. At the end of the day, no question, the start of the season, they'd be saying, right, if we can get a Europa League spot, we'll have done well.
Meanwhile, where is the party? Is it at Frank's house for you, Don? Or where has he told you the party is? Where's the real one?
The real one's at Frank's, but I'm not invited just yet. So I'll text Jody Morris and see if I can sort of sneak in through the back door.
And
that's exactly what Chelsea have done, by the way. They've snuck in through the back door. But hey, by the way, they got a great result today because I thought that was one of the most unpredictable games that you were watching in the Premier League. I had no idea before the game how it was going to play out, what the scoreline was going to be. In my heart of hearts, I thought it would have been a score draw, but getting the two goals just before half time, it gave them confidence to go into the second half.
Hey, a couple of great quality goals as well, Stevie.
Yeah, but you know what? I've got to say, that's not the biggest story for me. Kepka not playing. I'll tell you what.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to have seen Kepka's face when
Kepa.
He was told that he was on the bench, by the way.
It's not a golfer.
Sorry, Kepka. I was watching the golf before I came on, sorry. Yeah, Bruce Koepka in goal for Chelsea, yes. I would love to have seen his face when the team sheet come out and was called out and he was on the bench, because if you ever needed a statement or ever needed to know where you stand as far as the managers are concerned, and if you ever needed to know who's in charge at Chelsea, then it's Frank, because your world record signing goalkeeper is sat on his backside on the biggest game of the season. Mm-hmm. That for me is the big story. Listen, there was always a chance Chelsea would win the game. Because they've been struggling defensively, that's why we thought it was all going to be so tight. But today, the good Chelsea turned up today. Didn't give a lot away defensively and did enough going forward. And fantastic free kick from Mount and Giroud. I don't understand how he manages to run round a defender when he's a yard behind him over 3 yards, but he did it. Mm. And they won the game. Yeah. So, but no. The big one's Kepa. I mean, where does he go from here?
Well, it's got to be out, isn't it, Don?
Yeah, I mean, that was a massive statement. When we were at Premier League today and we've seen the team sheets come in, it was like a bit of a bombshell. It was like, wow, that is a statement and a half from Frank. And the bizarre thing was as well, watching the warm-ups, Kepa had to actually, you know, do all the work for Caballero, do all the sort of donkey work behind the scenes, warming him up and stuff, which couldn't have been easy. But in terms of statements go, you know, as Stevie said, Frank is solely in charge. If there's ever a power struggle between Frank Lampard and Petr Cech being the sporting director, Frank certainly won this one. And he put his reputation on the line because it could have went the other way. You know, if he had put Caballero in and Caballero made one or two mistakes and Chelsea lost the game and missed out on top four, then Frank would have got lambasted in the press. I'm pretty sure even by Chelsea fans would have thought he's dropped a massive mistake, but he was brave. He made the right call. And now look where they're sitting, top four, FA Cup final. It's not a bad first season.
They gave him a 7-year deal, Stevie. It's incredible, isn't it? Kepa's on $10 million a year, about £7.6 million a year. Who on earth is going to pay that after what we've seen over the last couple of years?
I don't know. I honestly can sit here and tell you, I have no idea. Nobody's going to pay anywhere close to what they bought him for. And as you said, the money he is on, and the money side of it, if somebody's absolutely flying and at their best, then the wages really don't come into it. But when you are having an average season as is possible to have, and you're on huge money and the price is huge, there's absolutely nowhere to go. And I can't answer your question because I can't think of any club that's going to go anywhere near close to what it would have to be to get him.
Even if you're a club in Spain, Don, you might be thinking, oh, maybe we can get him back and rejuvenate him. There's no way anyone is going anywhere near that sort of salary.
No, I mean, the links in the newspapers over the last couple of weeks is maybe a swap deal. So a swap deal involving Jan Oblak.
Oh, great. I'm sure Atleti would love that. I mean, here you go. Right. Greatest goalkeeper. No. Oh, thank you very much.
No, I know. I get it.
Don't worry. No one's got the Premier League in Spain. They will just think he's done very well and he just is homesick and he's decided to, instead of going back to Bilbao, he's going to go to Atleti.
I know. I totally hear you and I'm totally 100% with you. Why would you swap Jan Oblak or Stegen for Kepa at this present time? I'll never know. But him and maybe David De Gea might be in the same boat in the summer. You know, if Dean Henderson goes back to Man United, then all of a sudden, what on earth happens to De Gea and Kepa? Someone's got to take them, but on current form, why would you?
De Gea, isn't it? Don't you work for the Premier League channel, Don? Where's De Gea?
De Gea, De Gea, Kepka, Kepa, they're all Kepa, the same.
These living goalkeepers. It's difficult to say. Chelsea then through to the Champions League. No matter what happens in the FA Cup this weekend, Stevie, a successful season for Frank?
Oh, my goodness. FA Cup final and top four. If he sat down with Abramovich and said at the start of the season, I'm going to guarantee you top four in an FA Cup final, Abramovich would have turned his head and said, "Ooh, this guy's not right in the head." I'll tell you. So, absolutely huge success.
Has he sat to your right hand side? Is he when he said that?
Yeah.
Not right.
Don, I'll ask you, but then
you're yeah, Abramovich drops in for a cup of tea. Yeah, I'll be in a minute.
Don. For Frank, you love him, he's done very well, blah blah blah. No signings.
Exactly.
Right. Let's move our attention elsewhere, shall we? Before we talk about relegation, let's just talk about Manchester City. Convincing win once again, this time over Norwich. Kevin De Bruyne with a couple of goals, his final stats of the season. 15 goals, 22 assists. Best player in the league, Stevie?
I tell you what, that was a very subtle try to set me up for that one, wasn't it? Huh?
Sorry, I don't understand.
Show when, yeah. When Seb was running around throwing stats that De Bruyne had this amount of goals and this amount of assists, and Jordan Henderson, who won the sports right, has only had 4 goals and 5 assists. And if it's about goals, then it's dead simple. If you just want to stick to stats, then give it to the guy with the best stats. Football's not always about stats.
I just use that as a
reference about
point.
Influence.
I just asked you if he's the best player
No, you never.
Is he the best player in the league? That's all the question was.
You would be in your usual smarty pants, try to set me up.
A genuine question. Is Kevin De Bruyne the greatest
award?
Is he the best player in the league? That's all.
Is he technically the best? Maybe, yes.
Yes, that's quite a big thing, isn't it?
See where you're trying to take this?
I'm not trying to take it anywhere. Again. I'm just saying that he's clearly...
Absolutely, yeah.
Clearly the best...
Now, listen, I don't know why the bar... Why did we bother with the Ballon d'Or? We just give it to Messi every year because he's the best player, no question. Technically, he's the best player in the world, has been for a decade.
Okay.
So let's just give it to him. Because technically he's the best player in the world.
Right. Makes sense. That's the way it should be, shouldn't it?
Answer your question?
Yeah.
Well, in your little world.
Don, where do you stand on this? Best player in the Premier League, Kevin De Bruyne?
I think he is. I think his numbers and his stats prove it. But as you know, I'm not really a stats man. I watch the game with my own eyes and I judge people on their performances. And I don't see many players in Europe creating as many chances as he does. His technical ability, where he can find a pass, his range of pass from 10 yards to 40 yards, the amount of goals that he gets. I mean, at the start of the season, me and Stevie both played in midfield, and as midfield players, you set your targets as double-double. You try and get double figures amount of assists and double figures amount of goals, so 10 and 10. I mean, he's getting well over 10 assists and a ridiculous amount of goals at the same time. So it's like, this guy's just playing on another level. Mm. I mean, the game today was always going to be 5. I predicted a 7. I thought it was that type of game. But when you watch him and you watch how easy the game comes to him, left foot, right foot, his balance, everything comes into the equation. In my opinion, I think he's the best.
But you still would have voted for Jordan Henderson?
For the football writers, I would, because of what he does off the pitch.
Liverpool would have still won the league without Jordan Henderson.
But are you asking me football writers? Because if it's football writers, I would bring in Marcus Rashford. I would bring in Raheem Sterling. I would bring in Troy Deeney into the conversation. So there's only one winner. It's Jordan Henderson.
So just explain why football writers is different to just footballer of the year.
Well, I think they take that into consideration. I think the footballer of the year is the footballer of the year on performances. I think the sports writers take everything into the equation, what you've done on the pitch and what you've done off the pitch.
Stevie, when you won the football writers, what did you do off the pitch?
Well, I must admit, the year I won it, we did win the pool and darts league the very same year. So I had a very successful season off the pitch as well.
The Royal Community
were. That season, by the way.
All the supported of the local pub.
Yeah.
David Silva's final match in the Premier League as a Manchester City player. He's an interesting one because everyone goes, oh, no one gives him the credit he deserves. But really, people do, I think. People within the game know how important he has been to Manchester City. But what I think makes him very special for someone who's never played the game, and even more for you guys, I'm sure, is the fact he just seems to make everything look so simple, Don.
Yeah, and the fact, I think, if you ask any group of fans, because football is very tribal, I think they're honest enough to recognise a genius at work. And he is that, and he seems humble as well. When you listen to his interviews, he doesn't do many. But you can imagine, you know, him in that Man City dressing room, bringing the likes of Phil Foden and many others on as well. And the game, as you said, comes easy to him. Another player that's got great balance. He's got a great football brain. I don't think he's ever been the quickest, or probably hasn't even got a trick. But he plays the right pass at the right time, the correct weight of pass. And when he plays the game just looks a really easy game to play.
Coach's dream, Stevie.
Oh, absolutely. Coach's dream. But, you know, I think I guess the biggest compliment you can give any player is when your fellow professionals stand on the field and look across the other side and you've got David Silva standing there and you're thinking, I wish he was on my team. I mean, that's probably the ultimate compliment from any fellow professional.
Let's turn our attention now, shall we, to relegation. Norwich, of course, we knew were down. They are joined by Bournemouth and Watford. After the results today, Aston Villa survived. They will be in the Premier League next season. Let's start off, shall we, with this decision to sack Nigel Pearson with two matches to go. Stevie, it looks even more of a head-scratcher now.
We all know what they were trying to do. They were trying to be clever and get a bounce. That's what they were trying. But, I mean, Nigel took them from obscurity. I mean, there were 7 or 8 points adrift of every other team in the Premier League. So they were pretty much down when he came in. And, yes, they went on a great run. But a guy with the pedigree that he's got of avoiding relegation, I mean, what he did with Leicester, you have to stick with it. And Watford have got... You know, as far as the squad is concerned, they're not the worst squad in the Premier League. There are other sides, I think, that have worse players. The problem that they've had all year is all the chopping and changing. And every time you bring another manager in, he's got a different idea about certain things. And so you're constantly getting upheaval in how you're playing and what managers are looking for. So when you make 4 and 5 changes, then no wonder you don't get any rhythm. And to do it with 2 games to go, I mean, it's just absolute madness. But then that's what Watford are. Nobody else runs a football club the way they do. Nobody does the things they do. They've gotten away with it for a long time. But, you know, it's caught up with them this year.
What surprised me overall, because normally there was a plan when they sacked a manager, Don, in the past. When you bring in Hayden Mullins, who's got no experience, that was kind of it, wasn't it? I thought maybe they'll just bring a big boy in or someone who could just rally the troops. But there was none of that. It was Hayden Mullins and there was no reaction whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone would have really touched the football club for 2 games in the first place, Dan. So I think, you know, once the decision was made to sack Nigel Pearson, they had to really go with Hayden Mullins. Would Nigel Pearson got a result out of Man City and Arsenal? Probably not. But they wouldn't have probably been 3-0 down inside half an hour. Having said that, I mean, they got smashed against West Ham a couple of weeks ago when they were atrocious. So I think from what I'm hearing, and it's not gospel, there's been a few arguments between the Pozzos and Nigel Pearson, and I don't think he's lent himself to the board particularly well. So they've took the gamble, they've took the chance, and they've paid for it. But it is a model that is just really, really bizarre when you look at a club that sacks as many managers as Watford do, and 3 in 1 season. I mean, no wonder there's total confusion at that football club.
Meanwhile, Aston Villa stay up, Bournemouth down, Stevie. How much do you go back to the goal that should have been given against Villa in that match against Sheffield United on that return, which of course would have changed everything? If you're Bournemouth, how bitter are you looking back at that? Or as a professional, do you accept it?
No, 100% you accept it. And you know, the reason why Aston Villa is staying up is not down to that one thing. It's down to a major thing. And it's something that I particularly have been going on about for I don't know how many years, that too many coaches and too many teams nowadays don't concentrate on the defensive side of the game. Now, Aston Villa, when the stop happened, had an absolute disastrous defensive, the numbers against them. I mean, they were just shocking. And that's why they were going to get relegated, and that's why they were in relegation trouble. But since the restart, defensively, they've been as good as anybody. And that's why they're staying up. So it's not down to one decision. It's down to what the coaching staff... Well, they've got a hold of the players, told them what they want. They've obviously done the drills and training day after day after day till they were probably sick to death of it. But guess what? When you put that much work in and you take attention to the detail, guess what? You stay in the Premier League.
Don?
I agree. I was listening to Dean Smith on the radio in the car not long ago, and he was saying about the start of the season, and he said an awful lot of players come in, and he tried to get them ready for pre-season, but I think Douglas Luiz arrived days, I think, before their first game, and he couldn't quite get him up to speed. And he said they were fortunate. I mean, he said it in a nice way, Dean Smith, because he lost, I think it was his dad, I think, to COVID-19. So he's sort of saying he was very respectful. But he said the pandemic actually helped his group of players because he could then put them through another mini pre-season. And he said he worked them incredibly hard when they were in groups of twos, groups of fours, and then once they were allowed to train together, he said they went through a ridiculous amount of work. And they still come back, obviously not great, because I think there's that bizarre stat that the first 18 games have restarted. I don't think anyone in the bottom four won a game. But certainly in terms of momentum and dipping at the right time, I mean, they finished the season really strong. And a great story as well, that a local boy, a Villa fan, that Jack Grealish, got the goal, which might be his last ever game in a Villa shirt.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. More from Don and Steve there, joined by Ali for Extra Time, answering some of your tweets. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. One more domestic cup then to be decided in the top flight of English football. It's Arsenal against Chelsea, the FA Cup final. That game live on ESPN Plus on Saturday at noon. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A 2-0 victory over Sampdoria mean that Juventus are once again champions of Italy, making it 9 Scudettos in a row. As promised, then, Gab Marcotti with me. Gab, is it more of a sense of relief or jubilation?
I think it's probably, it's still jubilation. It has to be jubilation. Winning nine in a row when you change managers, it's still a tremendous, tremendous feat. Now, that said, obviously Juventus hobbled towards the finish line, just one win in their last five before tonight against Sampdoria. And again, tonight there was a moment when, you know, Juventus had to dig deep and really find some of those qualities that in the past were missing. You know, they lost Paulo Dybala, arguably the guy who carried them during this kind of dark period since the restart. He had to come off. Danilo, of course, also coming off. Sampdoria, winners of five of their last seven, nothing to play for, no pressure on them, but still frustrating them. The old fox, Claudio Ranieri, making life tough for them. And then they got the breakthrough late in the first half, and they still had to work for it afterwards. I think you saw their leadership come to the fore, certainly Cristiano Ronaldo's leadership, as well as that of others. The midfield finally clicked, and they took it home. So now they can go ahead and focus on the Champions League. It doesn't erase everything that happened before, but I think it's still, there's still plenty of reason to celebrate.
Has Sarri made any difference to this team?
Well, he made a difference to Paulo Dybala. And look, I think this is important because when Juventus decided to commit nearly $375 million over 4 years to Cristiano Ronaldo, they made a specific decision that they were going to go and try and win now, try to go to the next level now, playing a certain type of football. Then they go and they sign Maurizio Sarri, they decide to part ways with Allegri and decide to go in a completely different direction. But remember, the Ronaldo signing meant that the team had been built to win straight away, and that's not really what Maurizio Sarri does. He builds sides, and so that meant that things were difficult all year long. Paulo Dybala, I think, is exhibit A of the work that Sarri's done. This was a guy that was supposed to be sold in the summer to help balance the books. Instead, Dybala insisted on staying. Maurizio Sarri worked with him and really turned him into, you know, arguably their most important player, certainly since the restart. And you could even go out and make a case that without Dybala, you know, they might still win the title, but they certainly wouldn't have won it with two games to spare. So he's contributed on that front. What he hasn't been able to do is implement the type of football that he was brought in to do. And I think some of that is certainly his responsibility, but certainly not all of it. Certainly, I think the front office at Juventus and the people who do the recruitment they really should be taking a long, hard look at themselves.
Do they win this title without Cristiano Ronaldo?
No, they don't. I mean, if you say there's no Cristiano Ronaldo, but there's another top quality striker in his place, yeah, they still win the title. But I think Cristiano certainly, he's kicked on from last season. And I think there were certain key moments. I mean, there was one moment tonight when, as we said, late in the first half, Juventus frustrated, Dybala going off. It was almost as if Cristiano Ronaldo was willing them on. Dan, I saw him do something which I don't think in many years of football I've ever seen. He was so desperate to take a throw in quickly that he took it from behind the advertising hoardings. And then, of course, it was Cristiano who broke the ice and a very well-worked free kick with Miralem Pjanic, you know, confusing the defenders, creating space for himself to receive Pjanic's pass and drive it home. You know, these are things that show Cristiano's leadership as well as his quality. And I think there have certainly been games where Cristiano has carried the load, no question about it.
You mentioned the Champions League. How much house money is Sarri playing with going into that tie first with Lyon and then, certainly from Juventus' point of view, hopefully into the quarter semi-final?
I don't think Cristiano is out of the woods. I don't think Maurizio Sarri is out of the woods yet. Because, look, winning the title, it's a feat. It's 9 in a row. But this is Juventus we're talking about. And I think the yardstick by which he should be judged is, has this team progressed relative to last year? It's not entirely clear that it has. And it's also not entirely clear that the fans are necessarily buying what Maurizio Sarri is selling. So should they get knocked out by Lyon? Should they get knocked out in the quarterfinal? And should they lose badly? Should they not show signs of progress? I think Juventus will reevaluate Sarri's position. He may end up staying, I don't know. But, and like I said, he may end up being the fall guy. It's certainly not entirely his fault. But we simply haven't seen the sort of progress that is legitimate to see, you know, after 12 months in charge.
Out of all of the chasing Pat Gab, who will be the most disappointed that they couldn't push Juve all the way?
Well, that's a great question because I think for different reasons, Lazio will point to their collapse, but you know they simply ran out of gas and they ran out of players. Atalanta will say, well, maybe if we believed a little bit sooner. I think ultimately, though, it has to be Inter. I mean, Conte said, oh, look, they haven't won anything in years. You know, we've made progress. But equally, I think Conte knows in his heart that with some fewer injuries, and a better ability to manage their leads. This is a team that since the restart has lost 7 of 9 points in 3 games where, you know, they either gave up goals after the 85th minute or in the Bologna game, they had a 1-0 lead and a penalty and against 10 men, and they contrived to lose that game. You know, that right there is the difference between these two teams. And I think it's something that's difficult to swallow.
Just away from Juventus, last word on Italy. Gavs, I got you here, Ciro Immobile. 34 goals now all season. Extraordinary feat, although what, 14 of them have been from the penalty spot. A hat-trick today for him.
Yeah, look, it's an incredible scoring feat. I mean, if you want to not count the penalties, you still scored 18 goals from open play in Serie A. And he's been scoring a lot for several years. You know, this is a guy who really relaunched his career, had an unhappy time in Spain, and of course at Borussia Dortmund in Germany, didn't quite work out for him. He's got wonderful players around him setting the table for him, with the likes of Luis Alberto and Milinkovic-Savic. But he's really been a huge part of Lazio's push this season. And look, he may yet tell his grandkids that, hey, I won the Serie A title ahead of Cristiano Ronaldo if he manages to hang on in these last two games.
And what if he goes on and breaks that record from Gonzalo Higuain? How much of a caveat is it from people who follow Italian football that a large chunk of that was from the penalty spot?
I mean, look, people are going to go and make their own decisions. When Higuain scored, set his record of his 36 goals, just three were from the penalty spot. Also because he's not a particularly good penalty kick taker, no. I might add, whereas Immobile is actually very good from the spot. Goals are goals. You know, we count them. We count those goals, too. Does it mean that Immobile was a better player than Higuain? No, it doesn't. I don't think it should serve as a caveat. Numbers are numbers in the end, and it's still a tremendous feat.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. Stuart Robson is the special guest, as Julianne is on holiday for the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That is available to listen to tomorrow.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you, as always, for watching. Stay tuned. A bit of extra time action with Don, Ali, and Stevie. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Ali, Stevie, and Don with me to answer your questions. Let's just get a couple of business matters sorted first. Don, what's that T-shirt? Because we can't see it today because you're just like the bottom of the six. What is it? What are you doing?
Not the plant. Shirt with my name on the top.
Sorry, say again.
That's my Liverpool shirt with my name on the top. Oh. I'll give you a little.
There you go. Get it up. Up. Oh, there it is. Beautiful.
There it is.
Long sleeves, Don. Did you have a choice?
Yes, we had a choice. I was always a long sleeve man, to be honest.
You liked a long sleeve?
Yeah,
why?
I don't know why.
Why?
Yeah, long sleeve, short sleeve, long sleeve, short sleeve, long sleeve, long sleeve, please.
Yeah, but why?
Good answer. Good answer, Don.
Warmer.
Excellent.
It was warmer. What if I chose a short sleeve and it was freezing cold?
Well, you're an athlete, aren't you? You're supposed to be running around. Warm yourself up.
I'll just wear it. No. Long sleeve, please. Right. I can pull them up. Look, I've got these pulled up.
Oh, yes. Probably a freebie.
Got the option.
Stevie, were you short or long sleeves?
Short sleeve.
Of course, eh? Proper professional. Right, Stevie, there's something that's appeared over your right shoulder, which I haven't seen before. This is new. What is it? And let's not do that game again. let's not do that dance again. What is it?
That one.
It looks like a decanter of sorts. What is it?
Steady. Oh, it is the
Liverpool Echo
Player of the Year.
He's done it again. On the shoulder, man.
What is that else there?
But Stevie, don't. We're not doing this again.
What are you talking about?
Over your right shoulder. There it is, like the crystal thing. What is it? We haven't seen that before.
No. That.
Yes.
That.
Hey. No. There we go.
That is MLS Coach of the Year, 2002. I thank you.
Wow. Is that when you won MLS Cup?
Nope.
Next question, please.
How could you have won MLS Coach of the Year if they didn't win MLS Cup?
You know who won it that year, Dan?
Who won it?
This guy!
Oh, no.
Yes, Ali.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, did you come off the bench? He must have come off the bench.
Stevie, off the pitch.
I had an impact on the game. Stevie, an impact on the game.
Oh, what a moment. Right.
Impact guy. Yeah, right. Yeah, an impact with the ground. Let me tell you, fell over.
Hey, Ben, if you must ask me the question, I think it's over my right shoulder that you can see the medal from that MLS Cup final.
Oh, wow.
Love it, Ali.
The same.
Stevie, with Manchester United already secured the Champions League, would you play a full squad for the Europa League or give the kids the first team action?
Well, it depends. Well, it really depends on. I mean, Ollie, on the face of it, doesn't seem to have much of an ego, unlike his predecessor, who couldn't wait to win the Europa League because it was silverware. I would guess that he would probably concentrate more on the Premier League, especially if by any chance he's in with a shout of getting anywhere close to Liverpool and City. But I think I get the impression Ollie's a Premier League guy, and will try and play some younger players in the Europa League. So depending on the draw, of course.
Well, the draw's easy. It's Europa League. Look at it, Don. The final will be on the 28th of August.
Yeah. I think it'll be a mix. I mean, I watched Bruno Fernandes play today, and the guy looks absolutely shattered. So Ollie would want to win it, of course, because it keeps the momentum. It keeps the good vibes. If you're a United player, a United fan, it gives you optimism to go into next season. But at the same time, you've got to get some rest in. If you want to start the Premier League strong and you want to be consistent at the very start, your very best players at some point have to have a rest.
Ali, what do you think?
Well, I think once you get into the final stages of the competition, I do think that if there's an opportunity to win something and to continue this positive momentum, I don't see anything wrong with playing your big guys. And I just feel like you can manage that rest coming up in the next couple of weeks. And then after that, you fire on and say, you know, guys, let's just put in with the work for 10 days and see what we can come up with. And we get into the final stages of this competition. Let's go out there and win it. We are Manchester United, after all. And a club of our size, of our history, of our pride and everything that comes with being a part of Manchester United, I think there's a responsibility to win everything that you play in.
This is a regular question, Stephen, that we have. Has Jesse Lingard been robbed of the Ballon d'Or? Now, I'm not sure if you saw this today. Someone had a bet. We don't know the validity of it, but he bet at the start of the season, 66-1, that Jesse Lingard wouldn't provide an assist or score a goal for the whole season, which of course was going great until the 97th minute. He had £100 at 66-1, would have won £670. In the end, Luke wins nothing. That's my story for the day.
Well, he shouldn't have put that bet on, should he? Ridiculous bet.
What a ridiculous bet. What's happened to him, Don?
To be honest, I'm not going to get stuck into Jesse too much because I listened to what he had to say in the press over the last couple of days. And I think behind the scenes, I think he's struggled with a little bit of turmoil, family reasons. At the start of the season, the midsection of the season, I was really critical because it looks as though the player's lacking so much confidence. As you know, his numbers and his goals were non-existent. But after hearing the backstory over the last couple of days, I'll just cut him a little bit of slack.
I know Ali and Stevie don't gamble. Do you gamble, Don?
No, not really. I'm a bad gambler.
Really?
Rubbish gambler.
Really? Yeah. Okay, Ali, should Barcelona focus on developing their talented academy players like Puig, Fati, Ronald Araujo instead of spending millions on big-name players?
Well, I think that the development of Ricky Puig and Ansu Fati in particular, it's ongoing. And we are already seeing some of that at the first level with Barcelona. And we've also seen what they both can bring. Now, that development is only going to continue if they continue to play and if they have important minutes. I wouldn't like to see Ricky Pucci just sitting on the bench for the sake of sitting on the bench. I wouldn't like to see Ansu Fati just on the bench because Quique Setién feels like it. If there's an opportunity for these guys to be out on the field because they have a positive impact on Barcelona does, and I think they have had that impact, just continue to play these guys. I think perhaps in the short term, it's not going to be as beneficial as the long term. And that's maybe where Quique Setién and the board have to see eye to eye and say, look, I think it's important that we play these players. We may sacrifice some things in the near term, but in the long term, Barcelona is going to be in a better place.
Don, should Jack Grealish stay at Aston Villa now they've survived?
No, I think he's far too good for that. I understand and I know that he's a Villa fan and the emotion on his face today was just sensational for him. But he honestly plays the game at a far greater level. He should be playing Champions League football. And the biggest suitors in the Premier League will come calling in the summer. It is dependent on what sort of fee Aston Villa want for him. But I think Dean Smith is realistic enough to know that he can try and generate a massive fee for him, close to £50 million, and then try and build a squad, because that's what Villa need. They need a good squad. They don't need individuals. Be ashamed of Villa fans when they do lose Jack, but he's going right to the very top.
Can we have each and every single person on the ESPN FC team who picked Chelsea to finish outside the top four apologise for being wrong and give us our credit? Stevie, would you like to apologise to this person for saying that Chelsea wouldn't finish in the top four? Good. Yeah, excellent. Ali, would you like to apologise?
I don't even remember whether I had Chelsea in my top four or not.
There we go. Good. Did Stevie know...
Well, if you must know, I lost the connection, all right. So I'm assuming you were asking me a question, right?
Yes, but I played it off that you were refusing to answer because it was such a silly question. So I was trying to be professional and move it on, Stevie.
What
but
a then pro. You,
it actually worked.
But, what yeah, a pro.
But then now
silence,
we've got you've gone through.
Silence was golden there.
Exactly. Gone through the looking glass.
No, all I've done is I've highlighted your expertise and your position. Dan.
Well, yes, Stevie, you've been very mean to me though earlier on. So there we are. Did Stevie know Virgil van Dijk equaled his record of consecutive league appearances from the 87-89 season? Did you know that, Stevie?
I did not know.
No?
No.
Oh, heartbreak. No.
How many games did you play in a row? Do you remember?
I have no idea.
No, I should have done some research really before that question, but there we are.
Not clear. How would I know that?
Well, no, yeah, that's very true. Can you ask Don what Frank Lampard has told him about Timo Werner? He was, of course, at the game today wearing his mask incorrectly, but he was there.
Everyone knows that I'm in cahoots with Frank and Jody, and they value him very highly and they rate him very highly. And they are going to build a team around him. And why not? Because he's an unbelievable player. It's just where they're going to play him. Are they going to play him off the left? Are they going to play him as a nine? But I tell you what, you know, as teams to look forward to watching next season, Chelsea will be up there, in my opinion.
Defensively, they won't, though, will they, Don?
No, they won't. They'll concede 100 goals, probably.
Well, good. Maybe have a word with me.
Maybe you may want to have a conversation with Frank. I'm just saying, Don.
No, because they're just going to score 200. Kai Havertz is in, Ziyech is in, Giroud's in, Pulisic's in, Werner's in, wow. Mason Mount's in. They're just going to score 200 and lose 100 goals.
Perfect.
Exactly. Team to watch.
Stevie, was it awkward to be playing under managers who used to be your teammates? I reckon there are some players in Arsenal and Chelsea now who might be feeling the same way.
No, not for me. I would think it would be awkward if you didn't get on when you were playing with them. Then that would be even worse than just awkward. So, no, I didn't have that problem. I was lucky that the players that I played with and played under as a manager, I respected them. And so it was pretty straightforward and simple, to be quite frank with you.
Was it because who did you play under? Graham Souness and Kenny Dalglish?
Souness and Kenny Dalglish, yeah.
And did you have to call them gaffer and things like that?
Well, the thing is, it didn't change because I was a kid when I joined, they were senior pros.
Right.
So I kind of looked at them as though, even when they were the manager, I kind of looked at them the very same way. So it didn't affect me in any shape or form whatsoever.
Don, did you ever play under somebody that you played with?
I did. I played played with Nigel Spackman at Sheffield United. Then he got the manager's job. But Nigel was very experienced. He wasn't particularly bothered about players calling him gaffer, but we did out of respect. It's just a way in England. I'm not sure what it's like on the continent where you call him coach, but it was always a boss or a gaffer. So I played with under Nigel.
Ali, did you ever resent calling someone a boss or a coach who you didn't respect?
Well, I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but you don't go around the locker room here in the U.S. Calling them, hey, coach, how are you, sir? it's not quite the way things are done. And there isn't a term like gaffer either. So I didn't call anybody that. But they had my respect so long as they were doing their job correctly. That's all.
Yeah, it's a thin line in Ali's respect world. Did everyone call you coach when you were at the Revs, Stevie?
Hi. Yeah. Yeah. Most of a lot of the younger American boys who that's exactly the term they use with their coach at college or whatever it was. Some of the older ones like Raleigh would call me gaffer just for a laugh because that's as Don said that's the kind of culture at home. And actually some called me Steve and I actually didn't care what they called me. As long as they did it in a respectful manner and as long as they were putting it in training and doing it on the field, they could call me anything they like, but as soon as they were garbage, then I'd be down the throat.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, as always. Thanks for your tweets. Keep them coming in at ESPN FC. We're back with more tomorrow. Be sure to join us then.